don't even know whether to call it division or what. But let's hand over to Forrest. You'll tell us better how should we look at Forrest. Should we look at them as a what?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon. And thank you, honorable members. For now, forestry is a branch. Yeah. In the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, it used to be Program 5. So we'll go straight to their annual report. I'm going to ask, with your permission, to skip the other issues, which I think are not of importance, like your presentation outlined. Maybe a brief on the introduction. We are Program 5, like I said. The purpose is that we develop and facilitate and implement policies and targeted programs to ensure management of forests and sustainable use and protection of land and water. Currently, we only have two chief directorates, which is forestry operation. This one is vested with the responsibility to manage state plantation. The other one is called Forestry Development and Regulation. They provide leadership and advice and direction in the whole of the sector and policy formulation. The next slide. We will skip the strategic objectives. They used to fall under the then Department of DAF. I think you skipped something. Okay. This slide demonstrates that we managed to achieve 75% of our targets, and there were 25% not achieved. Okay. This first indicator, that is the target, we were expected to plant 550 hectares in state-owned plantations. Those areas that are vacant and are called temporary unplanted areas. So what happens is that they come as a result of your harvesting or as a result of fire or diseases. But then in terms of the sustainable forest management practices, they have to be replanted so that you can restock the plantation. We overachieved this target because we received above average rainfall. This is an area that is highly dependent on the rainfall, so there's no irrigation that happens here. The second target was the establishment of six legal entities. Chairperson and honorable members, I think it's proper that I give the background to some of these things a little bit. This area refers to what is normally referred to as recommissioning in the Western Cape, the 22,000 hectares of commercial plantations that were managed on lease basis. In preparation for the department taking over, and upon realizing that there is no land claims on some of these plantations, we then went out to try and establish legal entities in the communities around this place as a way of trying to transform the sector. We did go out, we did the consultations, but towards the end we could not attain this target because the community said we want more time. We want to apply our mind to this legal entity. What is it that has to happen? The next one relates to the issue of agroforestry. The then Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fishery had a mandate to ensure that there's food security. And in the midst of declining high cropping agricultural land, we then said as forestry, because this is a long rotation crop, what is it that we can do towards food security? We then said we can do agroforestry, which simply means you plant crops in an area that is meant for forest among the trees. So we had two pilot projects which we then you did them in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, but it was in partnership with SAFCOL, the Agricultural Research Council, and University of Limpopo. We piloted the planting of groundnuts and moringa trees within the timber. So this, then the people who benefited were the communities around this plantation, SAFCOL plantation. We also have a responsibility towards rehabilitating our 19,000 indigenous state forests. Depending on the level of degradation, you then begin to say, what kind of rehabilitation do you have to do? So you either are going to do what is called reseeding, or you stack up stones in an effort to rehabilitate dongas. Our target was 300 hectares. We managed to overachieve it by 0.44. Next slide. Why we couldn't achieve the establishment of the six entities, it was, as explained, the communities requested to be given some more time. I'm going to pause here, Chairperson, and say, unlike the Department of Environment, we had transversal targets, like how many jobs did you create, how many interns did you have, but they are not in this, they are held somewhere in Program 1. And therefore, the presentation for forestry will stop here, and I will allow finance to take us through the audit.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. The audit of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, we have taken only the part that relates to the forestry. I will skip with the slide. Oh, this is on. We prepared a separate presentation, but let me talk to this one because it's the same information. With the audit of the 18-19, the financial statement for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, we received a qualification, and the basis of the qualification was on biological assets, which then is affected by the forestry. The biological assets were relating to other plantations, which then when we do the biological evaluation, we have overstated the biological asset. When AG was looking at the disposals for your plantations is either through sale, through theft, or diseases, and also fire. Thank you, and also fire. Now, we had plantations, about 216 plantations that were inaccessible. And we had put a value in terms of the disposals and the losses. So AG was not satisfied with the response that we have given in terms of how we got to the figures in evaluating the inaccessible plantations, the 216 compartments, which then in return, when they did the extrapolation, the figure was at 248 million. We had reported 52 million in terms of those plantations as a value. So they could not rely on the value that the department has come up with, which then has led to the department receiving a qualification. And now this is the summary of the findings that AG raised. The valuation and existence of biological assets, I have spoken briefly on that one, which is the misstatement of the valuation of the biological asset. The other issue that was raised with regard to the biological asset was there was a disjuncture between what is on the system. We are using a microforest system versus to what is on the ground. AG also raised the issues, I guess. there were issues as well regarding the microforest system in terms of the administration of the users, where certain functions or users were not taken out of the system on time, which is the function as the department we did not have access to, which requires us to request additional, as the system, it is not a developed, it's not developed in-house. It is a system that we have procured. So we needed to get additional rights in order to be able to do that function. Other findings relating to the revenue management. This is a repeat function that was raised by AG. Last year, October, we had come up with a standard operating procedure as a department on how we're going to improve or improve our internal controls. But because of the challenges that we had, shortfalls of staff, we could not implement the standard operating procedure. It was based on as if things are normal, what we came up with, and we've had challenges in filling in of vacancies, and that challenge was due to budget shortfalls within the department, as the department has been experiencing budget cuts within the National Treasury. And the last finding relating to the forestry function is the completeness of the immovable asset register. The immovable asset register, even though we had a register that lists all the plantations and where they are, but AG needed more information in terms of your immovable asset act and in terms of your forestry act, which also needed additional information in terms of the vesting of the land, the proclamations, as well as also whether it belongs to the TVC states, and that information at the time of the audit we did not have. It's difficult to talk and at the same time moving the slide. Now, the corrective actions for the audit findings, what the department normally does, we come up with an audit matrix, which is what we use to keep track of all the audit findings. And then the audit metrics will have reporting timelines. The responsible managers will then come up with the action plans and the implementation in terms of the action plans. The critical posts that have been identified for the forestry in order to be able to perform or to implement in terms of the standard operating procedure that was approved last year have already been submitted to the human resource management. And we've also held, we've come up with an action plan. We've created a program on how we're going to roll out the workshops within, because we must do the workshops to the ground level on the implementation of the SOP to the plantation managers. I've talked on the system administrators. We have already now implemented the function of the system administrators on the microforest. As AG was raising the findings throughout the process before July, then the action plans where we could implement, we then got to implement them there and then. I think that shows you the findings and the action plans. I don't know if you have left something. Thank you, Chair. We are in your hands now.
You are still listening. Honorable members, they have finished forestry. There are questions, comments. We are number one. Any other hands? Okay. Number two. Okay.
Thank you. On page 7, when I look at the 2018-2019 audit outcomes, I think for the period from 2012 to 2015, for program 4, it looks like an audit opinion wasn't available. It is not available for program 4. Can you just expound on that briefly for me? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you for the presentation. Firstly, I'm sure in the next, when they come back, we'll have something more that will really make us understand what were they doing throughout the year, because what has been presented is, even if it's a unit, if you only present those the targets that are presented here, they don't give you a sense of really being at work. I know they are saying other work is with the other sections of agriculture, but still, when you talk of forestry, you expect more to, you know, in terms of the targets. Yeah, I don't think you can be said to be forestry and have so such, the targets that we have. In terms of the corrective measures, I don't see corrective measures, because here one of the things is that has been identified as a challenge was that of that land that has been under lease, and you are engaging communities. I didn't hear you talking about that in terms of correcting that, so that at least you are able to meet the target next time, and you are able to deal with those matters as they were identified. Yeah, just that, and the way of improving that qualification that this section got, we've got to see really the implementation of it more than before. Because it's not here, because I wanted to know, in terms of hectares of land that we talk about, that belongs to the government, and whether it's on lease or whether it's being actively used under forestry, do we have that, or do we have that per province? If we do, or if you are going to give us the next time the answers. But I think it's interesting to know, it would be interesting to know the province in terms of the hectares of land that is used for forestry. How many hectares, and what is the, are they on lease, and how long are those leases? And if they are no longer on lease and they belong to government, how do the communities benefit on that one? Thank you, Chair.
There was just a comment. Oh, you want to come in? Okay.
Chair, you know, really, there's lack of information on this report. Even when you look at the font, the way some of the font is too little, you can't even, some of us have got a problem of the eyesight. So I'm not sure what to ask, because information here, it's been hidden from us. Can we get the correct information, Chair? Because it's going to be unfair to the Department of Environmental Affairs that we say no, well done, and yet we've been grinding them all this time. Can they fix the report and get enough information, because if you don't know forestry, in fact, they must take as if that we don't know forestry. And it's the first time that forestry is coming to environmental affairs. So they must make sure that there's enough information so that we engage on the report and we can be able to assist them, because it's not assisting here. Unless a Department of Environmental Affairs, you can just guide them on really what is needed here. Thank you.
On page 8, under repeat findings, forestry and the microforest system, my understanding is that it's a plantation management tool that is online. What is the concern here with the fact that some people have access to certain facets of the system that they're not supposed to have? Have there been any incidents? Why is this important for us?
The last one, when the first presenter was presenting, she said, you have not spoken about jobs. So I thought somebody was going to come back and talk to that. So you don't come to members of parliament and not talk about jobs, which is a problem for the whole country. So I don't know whether there's somebody who's still going to talk to that. It looks like there was mention about decent jobs in your outcome four. So there's no way you can keep quiet about that. And the Western Cape issue, where you stopped halfway, I think we are interested in that. We want to know the challenges that you are confronting so that we can be party to that and our best to assist communities when they raise that. I just thought I should add those two. You want to say something? Yes, this the branch, according to us here, we are Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries. So we don't know much about how you relate to each other. We want to oversight even that process so that it can ultimately, so you can make comments.
Chair, I was going to recommend, and I got in on the tail end, so please forgive me if I missed something. But I was going to recommend precisely that we maybe just come and brief the department, the committee, on exactly what they do and don't do, also how we relate to each other, and then also in relation to the jobs, maybe just expand on exactly what the implications of those jobs are in the forestry sector.
We had already agreed earlier, some other time, that we would want a thorough briefing on forestry and fisheries. I think that was the agreement. But specifically today, we came for the annual report and the financial statement as presented by the Auditor General. So in other words, we still expected them to be detailed, because your report has been tabled in Parliament. We must prepare something here that will take us to Parliament. So we might not wait for, because when we go to Parliament, if you want us to say you said nothing about jobs, that will be out of order. If we say anything that we have asked here, and so you might be underrepresenting the department. I don't know how we will correct that between now and the 18th of October, where we must table a report in Parliament. So I'm saying we will have to I'm sure our officials and everybody else are looking at that. Okay.
Chair, can I once again make a recommendation that we just do maybe a short written submission to the committee just on the job issue? So.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Our sincerest apology for sounding like we are withholding information. We're just trying to stick to the targets that were given to us and report on that for the whole of the financial year. But just like the Acting DG has indicated, we are prepared to can come and, you know, open and present the business of forestry. There was a question relating to page 7 in terms of program 4 where the opinion is not available. I will not be able to respond to that because it's not related to forestry. We are program 5 in the then Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. There was a question relating to there is a need for the whole program of activities in forestry, which I think will do that. But I need to say as well, in that department, there were different ways of doing things. You would have activities that are expressed in the APP and those that are not expressed in the APP, like your permitting and everything. They were not featured in the APP, and maybe that is where we confined ourselves too much. We will open up when we come to present on that. The other question was the corrective measures, the leased land, in terms of the targets to be met and on how to improve the qualification. With regard to the biological assets, what we did was to say, as much as microforest is not ours, we don't have the rights. And it's a new system in the whole of the sector, including the private sector. So we migrated from COMPASS in 2016 to now. Even the private sector is experiencing problem with microforest. But where we went wrong was that we misstated the value of the biological assets. That is, what is on the ground, the timber, the value of timber, is not what is in microforest. And we went down and sat down and said, what could have led to that misstatement? And there were a list of issues that were uncovered, the root causes. For an example, there is no way that you can address this issue of adjusting what is on the ground onto microforest if you don't have people. For an example, overnight a compartment can burn. Microforest will still say that compartment is fully stocked, it's 8 years old, and it will give it a value. And that is where the misstatement started. Where you don't have people, you are not able to feed into the microforest. Overnight there can be a fire, and it then changes the whole setup. Overnight people still... that can also change, but we are looking into it. We have come up with a way of synchronizing, but that cannot happen without additional human power. That needs people on the ground. I've also taken note of the request to say we need to know how many hectares of land, of commercial land, belongs to government per province, how many hectares are leased, and how long is the lease agreement. What I can mention up front is that this information is readily available. We have what we call the category A's plantations. Most of those plantations are leased, and we call them the evergreen contracts. We will come and present on that. The minimum of a lease in forestry is 70 years, and that is based on the rotation. By the time that timber, you know, reach harvestable stage, which is almost maybe after 30 years or 25 years. So that is why some of the leases are 70 years. It gives people to harvest time and, you know, twice, I mean. So we will make that information available. Honorable members, we really, really did not intend to withhold information. We are going to put, you know, a presentation together that will meet the standards, and we think from there we will be able to be guided by you. In terms of the jobs, I must confess to say, if you have 80,000 of land, of commercial land, which is in the rural areas, this is an area that has got potential to create jobs right through, not seasonal. And those jobs, unfortunately, were not reported here because in DAF, the target sits somewhere. But I must also state that we have registered what we call working for forest, because it's as if we were anticipating the move, where we can own up to the jobs that will be created in the sector. I'm going to pause here and check if maybe I've missed anything else. Okay. There is the issue of the challenges raised by the AG when it comes to the residual challenges, when it comes to the immovable assets. This is where it comes from. Forestry comprises of land that used to fall in the then TBVC states, in central government, and the AG was saying, we want proclamation, like your title deeds, and we are not getting those. And some of the land now is under Ingonyama, if I may state that. So it's something that we are battling with. We are not getting the records straight. I'm going to give to Zoe to check if there's anything I've missed. Okay. I'm being signaled.
Request. Now we are in a portfolio committee meeting. We're doing oversight. So anybody who talks can say, there's a proposal, a second, and you close. No. So we wanted them to say something. And then beyond that, then we will follow on that so that we close it properly. I think we are done with forestry. The next now would be marine resource or something.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Members. If I can take this opportunity to introduce the fisheries delegation, because we didn't introduce ourselves at the beginning. My name is Sue Middleton. I'm the Acting DDG Fisheries Management, and alongside me is Mr. Roy, Witness Roy Fontaine, who's the Acting Chief Director, Financial Management for the Marine Living Resources Fund. And therein lies a story in itself. I think you'll see it is one of the audit findings that there was a lack of leadership and a lack of vacancies in critical positions, but I'll come to that. Chairperson, I'm going to skip a couple of slides. The first slide is on the presentation outline. The second slide is on the list of acronyms. So I'm going to skip to the slide number 6, which is the introduction and background. Some of this I did present in the quarter 4 report, but as the chair clarified, this is an annual report, so we need to represent. And members, we did also circulate the report again this morning. The first point to make is that this report, our 18-19 annual report for the Marine Living Resources Fund, was tabled by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, although we in the process of being transferred to DEF. And the reason for that is that the DG of the mother department, which was Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, is also the accounting authority for the Marine Living Resources Fund. Unlike other entities, we do not have a board or a COO. We have, the DG is the accounting authority, and that is why this presentation and the report is tabled under the DAF logo. The Marine Living Resources Fund is a Schedule 3A public entity, which was registered in 2001. So in terms of this annual report, we appeared both as Program 6 under DAF, as well as being a public entity. We have to table our own annual report. We are audited separately, and we have to have our own internal and external audit. So in terms of Section 10 of the Marine Living Resources Act, the DG, as I've said, is the accounting authority. The minister approves the revenue and expenditure budget each year. Our financial year ends on the 31st of March. We audited separately from the department, and our audit team is sitting at the back. And because we are a public entity, unlike the department, we can roll over or carry forward unspent money. Because we are a public entity, we don't have to give it back to National Treasury. In terms of Section 10 of the MORA, we generate our own revenue, which covers our operational expenses, so we don't get money from National Treasury for all our operations. In fact, industry finances our operations. And that happens through fines, penalties, and interests for any contravention in terms of the Act that come into our fund. Proceeds from the sale of confiscated fish and fish products, as well as vessels, vehicles, aircrafts, gear, and so on. Interests and fees on money in our bank accounts, cash investments, donations, and then our main source of income comes from levies. So when a rights holder lands fish, they pay levies on that fish. Okay, so in terms of slide 8, the Marine Living Resources Fund comprises of 6 programs, namely aquaculture and economic development, fisheries research and development, marine resource management, monitoring, control and surveillance, fisheries operations support, and financial management. Aquaculture and economic development is responsible for promoting aquaculture in South Africa and providing public support and research and technical support for the management of aquaculture. The Chief Directorate is also responsible for developing alternative livelihoods for coastal communities, which is becoming increasingly important because the wild fish stocks can no longer cope and cater for all those who want access to marine resources. And that directorate is also responsible for the management of the 12 proclaimed fishing harbors. Fish Fisheries Research and Development is responsible for conducting fisheries research into fisheries resources and ecosystems. So in other words, they're responsible for telling us how the stock status, how healthy the fish resources are, and that's done on an annual basis. Marine Resource Management is responsible for the sustainable use and equitable and orderly access to marine living resources through improved management and regulation. Basically, they're the permitting division of the fisheries branch. MCS, Monitoring, Control and Surveillance, they're responsible for the protection and promotion of sustainable use of marine resources through intensifying enforcement and compliance efforts. That's both land and sea-based. Fisheries operations support, which is what I do in my real job, and that's to provide support to the Chief Directorate of the MLRF, as well as managing the support components such as communications, HR, IT, legal services, fisheries, international relations, stakeholder relations, customer services, and then lastly is the Office of the CFO, or the Financial Management Office. Audit outcomes. Minister, before she left, asked you to be gentle with fisheries because of our audit outcomes. They're very, very embarrassing, and we received a disclaimed audit opinion. It's the worst audit opinion, I think, of the entire department, and it's a regression. We went backwards from the previous financial year. The AG and the report of the AG, you can find the detailed report is on page 15 of the annual report. But the summary of the audit finding is that the AG found that there were significant internal control deficiencies that resulted in the disclaimed audit opinion. They found that there was a lack of leadership, and leadership didn't provide adequate oversight into the implementation of mitigation plans to address prior year findings, that there are critical vacancies in key positions, particularly in the Chief Directorate Financial Management, and this resulted in non-compliance with the PFMA and other applicable legislation, and that the entity needs to strengthen its management of risk, consequence management, and its internal control environment, in short. I should also just mention, I said I'm the acting DDG. I think Minister announced previously that the DG, the DDG of Fisheries Management, is currently on a second round of precautionary suspension. The acting Chief Director of Financial Management was also placed on precautionary suspension during the audit period and has subsequently been dismissed. She was found guilty of 14 charges of fraud and financial mismanagement. So in short, fisheries is always and always will be a controversial area. Fisheries and access to fish resources is controversial. However, the management of the fisheries branch is a mess. It needs to be cleaned up. And unfortunately for the new department, they are inheriting a mess. Both the DG and the minister are well aware of what they're inheriting. I think it's giving them grey hairs. But if I'm allowed to venture an opinion, I think from the fisheries branch, we are pleased that we've been transferred to environment, forestry and fisheries. We believe we came from there, so we're going back. And we believe that we will receive better leadership and management oversight than from where we've come. We've also undertaken to put together, we have put together an AG audit matrix, which we will be presenting to the portfolio committee later in October. I must also report that we have, National Treasury has seconded an official to the Marine Living Resources Fund, who has worked with us during the audit, but he's also worked with us to develop a complete turnaround strategy for the fund to address all these findings. And the DG of DEF is in consultation with National Treasury to extend that secondment period so that this official can work with us to actually implement the turnaround strategy. I'm going to skip slide 11, which is the DAF strategic goals and objectives. Slide 12, for those of you who are interested, that's a picture of an abalone that's very hot in demand. I'm going to move to slide 13, which is a summary of our achievements, which means that with your permission, I won't go through the table because it's the tables contained on page 17, because that's just a repeat of the achievements. So the MRRF had 18 annual targets in its 2018-19 APP, with one of those targets falling under the Working for Fisheries program, which is the Extended Public Works program. The MRRF achieved 9 of its 18 targets, which is a 53% achievement rate, which I think we would all accept is unacceptable. It's underachievement. But as I said before, I think it is indicative of what has been happening in the fisheries branch, and the the very public spat between the minister, the DG, and the DDG. We did not achieve 35% of our targets, and 12% were in progress by the end of the financial year. So in summary then, we did achieve the first target of supporting 16 aquaculture projects under the Operation Pakisa Oceans Economy. 3 new aquaculture research studies were successfully conducted, namely a study on the economics of sea urchins, a study on animal health, I won't even try and pronounce that, a project on the assessment of temperature deoxygenation and acidification, the impacts on aquaculture. So we achieved that target. The fishing rights allocation process for 2015, the appeals process was successfully completed in Netfish, KZN Beach Seine, Seaweed, Hake Inshore Trawl, Horse Mackerel, and West Coast Rock Lobster, and the necessary Regulation 5.3 reports were compiled, so that target was achieved. Research target of conducting research reports to indicate stock status levels and to conduct TAC recommendations in 19 fishery sectors were compiled. So the TAC recommendations were compiled for 19 fishery sectors, and then there was a research report on West Coast Rock Lobster and Abalone. A total of 91 joint operations were conducted with partners, including under Initiative 5 of Operation Pakisa. There was a total of 4,698 compliance and enforcement measures that were implemented in the 6 prioritized sectors, namely hake, abalone, rock lobster, lionfish, pelagics, and squid. and a total of 281 investigations were conducted in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act. The targets that we did not meet was that we did not successfully meet the target of allocating fishing rights to small-scale cooperatives in all four coastal provinces. We only allocated in the Northern Cape by the end of the financial year, and the rest will be allocated by December of this year. So that was an in-progress or partially achieved. We did not achieve the objective of developing an implementation plan for the Aquaculture Development Bill or Act. And the reason for this is that this piece of legislation was not yet signed into law, so we could only develop the implementation plan once it had been approved. The story there is that the bill was submitted to Parliament in June 2018, but it was decided that it would be held over for the sixth administration. So now it has to be revived under the sixth administration. But the department is currently having a discussion as to whether it should be revived or whether it should be incorporated into a general amendment of the Marine Living Resources Act. And then we did not achieve our objective of allocating commercial fishing rights under FRAP, allocating commercial fishing rights in the abalone fishery. This fishery was held over, and the new minister, Minister Creasy, will be taking a decision on the future of the abalone fishery. You may know, and we will be doing a presentation on FRAP 20, a detailed presentation later, as well as a presentation on small scale. It's on the program for later in October. But Cabinet has endorsed the extension of the timeframes for dealing with FRAP 2020. The new deadline is now the 31st of December 2021. Chair, as I said, I'm going to skip on slide 17 to 35, because those are going through the table, which is just more detail of what the summary that I've presented. And we'll now move to the financial statements, which start on slide 37.
Good day. Chairperson, honourable members. Sue introduced me earlier. I'm Witness Wayfontein. I'm the acting Chief Director of Finance. First, if you allow me, I will just dive into the issues of the AG that he has raised. Sue has already indicated the root causes or the problems that we've experienced, but some of the issues are much more detailed in terms of in terms of the financials and how it affects the set of financials that we are presenting today. Just need to switch on my computer here. Yeah? I'm not going to talk to that one at this point. Excuse me quickly.
Just to go to the next one.
What the hell? Okay, that is. Yeah. Did I say that aloud? Yeah. The AG has given us this claim audit, and it was based on the following. I'm mentioning this because it affects our financials, basically. So this claim audit is something that you can't really rely on. So they've disclaimed us on the following balance sheet items: assets, inventory, biological assets, trade payables, contingent liability, revenue, and expenditure. As you will note, that actually covers the whole of the annual financial statements. We've accepted the findings from the AG, and we agree with them that some of the issues that they've raised are legitimate. So based on all of these issues, we've decided to develop a matrix as indicated earlier. We've been trying to work hard in terms of just to understand the depth of the challenges that we are in. I mean, we've just finished the August reports in terms of reconciliations. That does give us a little bit of a sense of where we are in terms of the issues the AG has raised. So that's why we are not in disagreement with the AG. We are in agreement with them, and some of the issues are being dealt with, as indicated by the acting DDG. If you go to the balance sheet, so what I'll be going through here in terms of the balance sheet, it's basically balances that are disclaimed, meaning they are there, but there's a lot of questions around them. So we are in the process of trying to rectify all these issues. Plant and equipment, indicated there, we didn't buy major assets in that financial year. Most of it is a decrease because we using GREP, generally recognized accounting practice. So we write off depreciation on our assets. Those assets are mostly our vessels, basically, that we have that do our research and our compliance functions. Inventory, you will note, is quite high, and this is because we've had some challenges in terms of going on tender to secure a service provider who can process confiscated abalone. Currently, we've just gone out now to deal with some of those issues. The terms of reference and specs committees have just been appointed. So we are busy working on it. And as you will note, that is also part of the finding of the AG, where he couldn't, because there was no stock count at the end of the financial year. It is a bit of a complicated process because this is frozen stock. So to unfold such a lot of stock and the stores are full becomes a little bit difficult, and you might be putting the stock at risk. Trade and other receivables are quite reasonable. It's a little bit of a drop there. And then you will note cash and cash equivalents. This has to do with the fact that, and it's also in that report of the AG, as an emphasis of matter, we haven't spent our money on working on fisheries. The AG has worked out the figure percentage, I think it's about 96% of the money allocated to us was not spent at the end of the financial year. That relates to these expanded public works program, basically. That is the money that's unspent, that's sitting there, basically. And that is also reflected under deferred income as a liability, meaning that we are creating a liability there to indicate that if Treasury do request that money back, we owe that money to Treasury, the 247 million. Trade payables and others were qualified. The 83 million as it is, we are busy with the process of reconciliation. Included in those amounts are amounts that are currently being disputed. There's a huge amount of legal fees that we are in court currently, stating that we don't owe the people those kind of monies. So as you see, that is the current state of the balance sheet as it is. The next slide deals with the financial performance, which is the traditional income statement of the past. As we indicated, we generate our own revenue, which is the top part. There's a slight drop of from the previous year, from 62 to 58 million, in terms of own revenue generated. And that is can be explained as a result of the fact that the TAC normally drop. And because we're also going through a process of allocating rights, and people are a little bit uncertain, they tend to be non-compliant around about that time. And then there are the revenue from non-exchange transactions, which is includes your levies, basically, your fines, grants, and confiscated assets, other income, service income. Let me highlight the ones where we've dropped significantly, which includes levies, as I indicated earlier, that is determined in terms of the amount of fish that we allocate to the industry. If the TAC drops, that the total allowable catch drops, then your levies also decreases. Your service in kind were $358 million. That reflects the amount. We have this fun kind of, I don't want to call it funny, but that is the requirement that we disclose what the department is paying on behalf of the fund. That amount includes the salaries, all the buildings that we're renting, water and electricity, etc. So our total revenue for this, including this service in kind, is about 712. So in order for us to run fisheries, we have an amount of 712 million to deal with that. In terms of expenditure areas, our biggest cost driver there is vessel operating cost. Vessel operating cost is amounting to about 180 million. And the operational cost of 127 million consists about of outsourced services, travel, international travel, etc. There's at the back of the annual report, there's a detailed income statement that gives all the details of what these amounts that are summarized in there. In a slide in the annual report on the last page. So as indicated, vessel operating cost is the biggest cost driver because our vessels are at this current moment, a bit underfunded in terms of to do their work. Just to refuel the Sarah Barman, for instance, takes about anything between 5 million, and that is just on one tub. We've just put the Africana in dry dock, and that cost is like a maintenance, it's required, it's about 10 million. So it is very expensive to have these vessels, and we are currently trying to manage with this limited budget to ensure that we do achieve our objectives. I'm not going to go into service in kind. It's on top is income, and at the bottom is an expenditure because it's already, it's actually in the books of the department. The statement of changes does reflect the fact that we've made a loss for this year, for the financial year 2018, a loss of about 47 million rand. And you will know that we have, for instance, a lot of legal fees that we paid for this year, and traveling was quite a lot also. That has contributed to this loss, basically. And also our revenue has also decreased to some extent. And that's the cash flow. The cash flow reflects the 264, as I indicated earlier, that we have 264, of which a bulk of it, of about 248 million, belongs to this program called the Working for Fishes program. The remainder is our operational financial contribution, basically. In comparison our budget with our actual information, you will see that it at the end the difference between budget and actuals. The actuals indicate the loss that we've made of 47 million, meaning that we've actually digged into our reserves to fund those that additional money that's in there. As indicated, although it shows there's a 47 million rand of a loss. Some of these amounts need to be re-looked into so that we can possibly get understanding, like consider matters that are currently in dispute that are included here might be reversed, meaning that they won't be coming through because we are on an accrual basis and we have to accrue if these the service providers have billed us. That's the last slide. And going concern, I think the AG has raised that issue. There's a risk that we are not a going concern. It was at one stage when they've calculated some of those figures. They've made an analysis on it. And yeah, there is a risk where certain of these if you use the figures that is in the annual report, that we are at risk of being, of, if I have to say, being technically bankrupt. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The last comment to make, the D, as the AG raised the issue of consequence management. And I just want to put it on record that there's a bit of a lag time in dealing with consequence management. So to be clear, the DDG who's on suspension, many of her charges relate to the 17-18 audit findings, AG findings, for which she has been charged. But the disciplinary process has been delayed. So it's not that there isn't consequence management, it's just that perhaps it's not speedy enough. Thank you.
That's the input number one, two, three, four. Can we start number one?
So, forgive me, I'm catching up. With regards to consequence management, looked like there was consequence management and then there wasn't and now there is again. So, if I'm right, during the period of this annual report, the accounting authority was former DDG Mlangena. And he's now no longer in the department. He's former DG. He's now the DG in agriculture and land reform. Is that right? And that then Minister Zokwana was the political head of the department, and he had that public spat that you referred to with the DG Mlangena because the DG suspended DDG Dudane. Is that all right? Okay, you're nodding. Right, now I'm catching up. Thank you. Why has there been this lack of key personnel in finance? Who should have made those appointments? That's question one. On to some particulars. During the year in review here, how many thefts of abalone were there from the abalone store? And then finance, the service providers that you're in conflict with at the moment, in dispute with, that might affect your figures, could we just be told who those service providers are?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the financial statements, my first concern is the deficit. The deficit, which the AG says is due to the decline in your revenue, and you have an increased operational expenditure. But on the other hand, I think somewhere you indicated that you did not spend. There is some money that you did not spend. I'm trying to understand that one. How does it relate if you are not spending and your revenue is not increasing? Your expenditure is increasing. And if as a CFO, you are given that job of looking after the finance, how can you allow an operating expenses to grow when you know your revenue? Then there's something that is that one is not correct. On the page of this document where you said there is that the notes or to the financial statements that are given here. There is, I think it's page 94, revenue items not included in budget, and they are shown there. Why would you not include revenue items in a budget if you are now presenting it? Is there any reason for that? And you also, on page 95, you have your depreciation. I don't know whether you previously you budgeted from the beginning of the year for depreciation, because when you look at it, it indicates a negative amount. Was it budgeted for a depreciation in the beginning of the financial year? Because if you have an asset, each institution or government that have got assets, for you to cater for those assets, you've got to budget for depreciation. And if you are budgeting for it, do you have a particular cap in terms of the percentage where you say we're supposed to budget up to this percentage of the budget for the depreciation, and what is that percentage? And the writing of debts, that one is reading here in the document. It looks like we're having a deficit, but at the same time we're writing off debts. Why are we doing that? And is it in terms of financial prudency? Why is it that being taken as something that should be done instead of continuing to try to find a way of collecting the debt so that you can increase your revenue and at the same time being able to reduce the deficit? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine are two very short, not questions, but requests. First, for us to be told as to what the reasons are for not spending the money allocated for working for fisheries. And then secondly, to be told what causes the delay on consequence management, especially on the suspended DDG's case. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think we must appreciate the honesty of this particular branch. What is it? Fisheries. Yeah, we must appreciate their honesty. And she wanted to steal the limelight at the beginning and said, the minister said what. I think I'm happy that we're on record. And I pray that we are live on TV so that we can send a message directly to her. You know, because sending you, it might take a bit of time. Tell the minister that this is not a playground. We're not playing. The CFO takes the stage and tell us that they are technically bankrupt. It's an international embarrassment. You know, I would never say that. When I'm acting or not, I would never do that. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no fundamental difference between forestry and fisheries. It's only fair that we request the management of the Department of Environmental Affairs to take us serious. The department in its entirety to take us serious. We are responsible for providing political oversight on the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries. So it can't be that the Department of Environment arrives here and outshines, in fact, Forestry and Fisheries. Because to us, you are one. It does not matter who speaks on behalf of one. To us, all of you are one. You call yourself in nice English, branch, forest, branch, what. To us, you are one. Now, we were almost satisfied with the report, the presentation done by the Environment Affairs. But the department, the forestry and fisheries are not convincing. You look very sad, you know, when you took the stage there. you looked like people who are ready to cry. Perhaps it's because you understood that what you're going to present to us, the level of embarrassment there, does not look like you. So we must say this, Chair. The colleagues are saying that some of the issues that are raised by the AG are legitimate, and that you have developed a metrics to try and respond to those issues. But we don't see the metrics. We do not know when was it introduced, and how far are we making progress in terms of responding to the issues highlighted and flagged by the AG. And if my memory does not fail me, Chair, somebody earlier was speaking and said, and he or she said there is an issue on overspending, and it relates to EPWP. And the acting CFO, Chief Director, Finance, or whichever way, of Forestry, comes and says the same thing. It looks like this EPW thing is a scapegoat for everybody. It can't be. We plead with you, acting DG, and yourself, Chief, that next time when you come here, you don't have to come naming one or two people or three, I think, who make sense. I think it will work, you know, for us. Have a comprehensive report of the entire department. Take this committee up to speed on the detail on fisheries, on the detail on environment, the implications of finances. It saddens us that person is suspended, but it's very good that a person can be accused of 14 charges, really. But it can't be that person has the ability and capacity to drag the entire department down. Who else was there? So when we expect to interface with that content, you have 14, one person. Who else was in the soccer field? Who scored? Who was in the midfield and the defense? It can't be that person was just running the department amok alone. Just out of concern, Chair, there's 47 million deficit there. 47 million deficit. And we are told it's on travel. To where, by who? And some of it is on civil cases. So every day somebody just sues Forestry Branch. Every day. That is what takes it so high. But my last input here would be that let the department take charge. Consolidate a report. Put some meat there. That one who's dismissed and suspended is not an issue. If there are others who must be suspended because of these things that are happening in that department, let it be as such. Please don't come here, my comrade, if you have problems like this. And we don't have to hear these things from the AG. Rather tell us about these things so that we can press right buttons for you to fix these things before the AG picks them up. Thanks, Chair.
It looks like... are you? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know, is fisheries and... and marine living and fisheries and forestry, are they now under management of the Department of Environmental Affairs? Why I'm asking is because I can still see the presentation, it talks of agriculture. And I heard the minister said there'll be a time where it's going to be an official handing over to the department. When is that? Has it happened? And when is it happening? So that now we can say, if they are now both of them fully under the Department of Environmental Affairs and under our minister, then we say that really the Department of Environmental Affairs has got a huge task ahead of that department, because we need to assist both of these branches, both fisheries and forests. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think I'm happy when the presenter say there was consequence management that was done on the officials that didn't do the correct work, they didn't comply according to Finance Management Act. So now you need to make sure that the Department of Environmental Affairs that those gaps are closed. The acting must stop, we must be advertised, and we have the permanent staff that we know that is, they must be held responsible for what they are doing when it's wrong. But through you, Chairperson, that what I see here is that the two branches, they really need a serious assistance from the Department of Environmental Affairs. But I know that it can be done once officially they are with the Department of Environmental Affairs. Because if you see also the report, the annual report from Marine, it's got the other DG, not this DG. But I remember the DG did mention that there were issues, the agriculture DG did mention that there were issues that were not running correctly, and hence there were some issues that had to be taken through Labor Relations Act. And if you can go to the media now, the SIU is on top of the department because of fraud. KZN and other departments where the officials, because of seeing the loopholes, they decided that they must be the beneficiaries of what was supposed to be for the community, and they didn't disclose. So the SIU is on top of that department. But I don't want to go further to say anymore, but we need clarity. When are these two branches coming to officially to the Department of Environmental Affairs, so that Environmental Affairs, we can task you to say, please correct these things as soon as possible. Thank you.
I just want to refer to page 16 and slide 31. It says no rights were allocated to the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape cooperatives, and it says there were delays in the registration of cooperatives with CIPC. What were these delays, and what is the new timeline for allocation of those rights to the cooperatives? And then on the next slide, page 32, recovery plan for Avalon was not developed. Why was this so, and what is the timeline for a recovery plan? What is going to be done in the interim? Thank you.
Last from me. I suspect we still agree on the same approach we adopted for forestry. Because for us, when we do oversight, we're not only focusing on these details you are giving us. We want to see the implementation of the laws. We want to see transformation. Now, currently, what is confronting us is a problem of corruption. It looks like we're not far from that here. This term called poaching, and specifically about Abalo. I don't know whether I'm calling it correctly, this Abalo. It looks like we're not far from that. For instance, there's a mention here which we expect the committee to be updated about, on what happened to the 14 fisheries inspectors who had taken bribes to facilitate poaching of West Coast rock lobster. You're not talking to those specifics actually tell us a bigger story than what we are. So where we see that fisheries, instead of helping us to get food, there are people who are feeding themselves into this. So when there are examples, we would want to see that. It is correct as well. Something that says the Auditor General comes at the end of what is supposed to be done. The people at the center of what is happening are ourselves. When I say ourselves, our face is the minister who has got this immediate responsibility. We do oversight. So, obviously, yeah, I don't want to use this turnaround thing. People get used to it. And there can be different turnarounds. But specifically, yeah, we can see that corruption is rife here. Whether you call it whatever, it is rife. And if we must get to the bottom of it, then we expect action. You can cite the DDG. I think the whip is right. It can't be that you only have one person here who has caused all this. Now, I've just counted 14. I don't know where those 14 are. Yeah, 9 now. 9 is fine. But it's a big number. There might even be more. So poaching, whether you are in environment or fisheries, it's a big problem. It's giving us a bad publicity. In fact, every time I'm asked about this thing of Abalo, you've got important incidents that we are not able to follow. So let's follow that and be able to say what is happening. Operation Pagisa, 19 million, spent 6.5. I am not sure if I read it well, but you need to tell us. We indicated that underperformance affects poor communities. And Operation Pagisa talks to such communities. It would be good as well if we can be informed that there was intention on the part of the department to increase application fees, levies, etc. I don't know how far are you with that, whether it's something that is happening. There was an irregular appointment of Wiljaro Pty Ltd. You can help us to understand such things. That will help us. And also that Royal Court of Jersey that awarded the department $67 million. What is happening there? I'm just citing issues that are relevant to, that are practical, that would say to us on record, this is what has happened to this situation. So I'm just helping, unless you are going to say it's that DDG who can tell us about all those, then we hear you. But I'm saying the fisheries branch, it looks like it's going to test us on this issue of corruption. And I think the committee will not fail that test. The minister will not fail that test, because this is food for the people out there. Thanks. It's your turn now. You can respond.
Thank you, Chair. I'm only going to deal with issues around integration of the two programs into the department, and in doing that, I'm going to refer us back, I think, to the first sessions we had, both with the DG and the Minister, just on the explanation of the proclamations. Firstly stating that the first proclamation that was done in June did not do away with the departments as separate, so you still had Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. So it still stands up until such time that we have done all the transfers, which I'll talk to the date of all that transfers, which is why you'll probably see their presentation still referring to such a department existing. Same with Environmental Affairs. You would have noted that ours didn't say DEF. It said Environmental Affairs. So in terms of those proclamations, we still seem basically as separate entities. However, in July, there was a proclamation that transferred the functions, which is the fisheries and the forestry functions, to the minister in July, which is why the minister is the Minister of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries. However, this then does not mean all the transfers in terms of even the funding or changing of the vote and accountability, even the personnel or controls we would have on personnel or filling vacancies is now in the DEF family. It's not there yet. And that is the process that we are working with DPSA. The envisaged implementation date for that full transfer to be done is the 1st of April 2020, next year. That's the date that they say they would have finalized the process. However, Treasury now is considering what are the areas that they can prioritize now in the midterm review in October. So we are hopeful we might be in that batch, but if not, the final date is it's next year. But given that the functions have been transferred to the minister, it then means we need to find a best mechanism to manage this transitional period, because then minister still needs to account for all the units and the frames. So, Honorable Modise, I take your point that we can find a way of consolidating and packaging information in a standard format for all of us. I think the only challenge that we had at this point is when you are tabling an annual report and in line with the requirements, what we bring as a presentation on the annual report should be consistent with what was the tabled document. So we couldn't necessarily change the format and how the two branches present here on the basis that they had to be in line with what was tabled there. But in the submissions that we make, we can, just for clarity, try and ensure that we standardize so that the submissions that come are clearer. I thought I should just maybe give a response on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with some of the content issues, and then my colleague will deal with the financial questions. The first question was on why were there vacancies for so long in the financial section. And that's it's a bit of a story, a bit of a history, but when fisheries was transferred from DIT, as it was called, Environment and Tourism, in 2009-10 to DAF, the DAF decided that there could only be one CFO for a department, and that was the CFO of DAF. They didn't want a CFO for the Marine Living Resources Fund. That's one part of the story. The other part of the story, at the time of the transfer, the official went to environment, so the post was transferred vacant to us. And because of this idea that all support components were going to be integrated fully into DAF, there was a decision not to fill that position. So the CFO post has been vacant since since April 2010. since 2010. DG Dear Nosipo has given us an instruction that that post, the CFO post, must be advertised now in October, must be filled immediately. That's in line with the AG's recommendation. And that her instruction is that it will be called a CFO post, a CFO for the Marine Living Resources Fund, because that is a requirement under the PFMA for a public entity. We have to have a CFO. So she's instructed that we fill that post now. We advertise the post with the aim of filling towards the end of the year, December 2019. In the same light, she's instructed that the vacant director post supply chain management be filled, advertised now in October and filled, and the vacant director financial management post be advertised now and filled. So the vacant financial posts are being prioritized to be filled immediately or as soon as possible. The DDG post, there's a warm body in that post, so that is subject to the finalization of the disciplinary process. But there are other key vacancies in the fisheries branch. I think I reported at the last meeting that we have a 13% vacancy rate. So obviously it's going to depend on finances, but we will do it in phases. We have identified critical vacancies for first round. Those, as I've mentioned, are the financial posts. We've also identified to be filled now by the end of the year. There's some vacancies in the harbors, the harbor masters and dockers, dock masters. Those are the people responsible for pulling vessels up on the slipway for repairs and maintenance. And the harbors have been identified as a critical risk, so those posts are going to be filled immediately. There was a question on how many thefts have taken place or burglaries have taken place in the Avalon store. I think I reported at the last meeting that there were 5. It's now 6. There was a further burglary 2 weeks ago. You're going to deal with the issue on a deficit. The Working for Fisheries program and the under expenditure, my colleague can also comment, but effectively, I think the Working for Fisheries program has collapsed, and it's one of the charges that the on the DDG's charge sheet. You're correct, we can't point all ills and problems of the fisheries branch to one individual, but a lot of issues are part of the disciplinary process. Similarly, Chair, I think fisheries would welcome any investigation into allegations of corruption, and we would love for corrupt officials to be dealt with in terms of the law, for justice to take its course so that the rest of us who are not corrupt are not painted with the same tar brush, because I think there is a perception that fisheries is all corrupt, and that's simply not true. In terms, the nine officials that you mentioned, they are in the Overberg, in the Gansbaai area, who were arrested and are on criminal charges for colluding with poachers. They're out on bail. The criminal case is proceeding, but the DG Deer has also instructed that those officials need to be removed from the Gansbaai area. They can't be continue to operate in the area where the crime was committed. So that process is underway, and the disciplinary processes against those nine officials are also proceeding. I think we've dealt with the issue of the transfer. Just to reiterate why this was tabled under DAF and with the DG DAF's picture. I mean, this audit is up until March, the 31st of March 2018. That's prior to the transfer of fisheries to DAF, and the DG was the accounting authority at the time. So that's why it was tabled as it is. Chair, you asked about the irregular appointment of Will Jarrow and the Bengus money you mentioned of the $67 million. Let me just say that both of those are part of the disciplinary charges, and both of those in particular are under investigation by the state attorney, who the department, DAF, has appointed senior counsel via the state attorney to investigate those two charges in particular. The state attorney are working with the U.S. Treasury around this money. So I'm not aware of how far the investigations are, but it is under investigation. I can also mention, if not just disciplinary charges, we have the Hawks, we have the SIU also investigating various things in fisheries. So it's not a comfortable place to be in fisheries with all these allegations and corruption and investigations going down. The Honourable Winkler asked about the small-scale fisheries program and the CIPC process. So rights were allocated in the Northern Cape and are still outstanding in the three other coastal provinces. The minister has instructed, and that's Minister Creasy, that rights will be allocated in the Eastern Cape and KZN by the end of October. That the registration process there is complete, and we are ready to allocate small-scale fishing rights. And she's indicated that the Western Cape, where there were delays, those rights will be allocated by the start of the West Coast Rock Lobster fishing season, which is essentially it's staggered. The start of the season is staggered. It starts earlier in the Northern Cape, and it's later as you come down the coast for biological reasons. But essentially by the 15th of December, November to the 15th of December is when the lobster season opens in the Western Cape. Those are our time frames, which I don't need to tell you are extremely tight. And so to meet that time frame is a challenge. The CPIC story is rights are allocated to small-scale cooperatives. The small-scale cooperatives cooperative registration falls under the Department of Trade and Industry, the DTI. They're responsible for that registration, and delays were experienced at that process. We've since got DTI cooperation, and we hope to fast track the outstanding registrations in the Western Cape in order for us to meet the November-December deadline. The abalone story, that there was a, the minister decided to, the, this is the former minister, the previous minister, decided to extend the start or delay the start of the abalone season in the 1819 season. And so that delayed the recovery plan. But that has since been completed. Chairperson, there was also a comment on why we didn't speak in more detail about the turnaround strategy and the AG audit matrix. My understanding is that there is a PC session, the Portfolio Committee session, sitting on the 22nd of October, and rightly or wrongly, I thought we would be presenting that detail there. Witness, do you want to?
Okay. I think one of the members has asked the issue about who are these companies that we're having a dispute with. If I have to mention some, the ones that we have, that we are currently busy with, having legal fights, it's Barnabas Tulu and Company. We have Shine Mula also, was written to us a letter making demands for payments. And then internally we have this little bit small amounts. These are the bigger amounts, like I think Shine Mula is about claiming for $1 million. Barnabas is more than, I think, I don't know the exact amount, but I think it's about $30 million at this point in time. So those are the ones that we are currently, that I'm aware of, that we are dealing with, and the state attorney is dealing with them. The unspent monies for the Working for Fisheries program, that is not spent versus that we have a decrease in revenue management and revenue income and an increase in expense. We have an operational budget that deals with from our own income, and that deals for our operational expenditure. Then Treasury gives us these earmarked monies, which includes working for fisheries. We can't use that money for our operational things. That money is meant for job creation. So if there's no jobs created, we can't spend it. We have to return it, or the next year at least make a plan to create those jobs. So that's on that basis. I think the chairperson has asked, when are we increasing fees? There's an indication we are busy with the process of saying we will be increasing fees for this year. But before we will do that, we will obviously do an indication of whether these fees are affordable, because it is a bit tough in the fishing industry at this point in time. So let me just see where and which one I've covered. And it will cover the right of death. There's a process that we follow. When it ends up with the state attorney then starts a process separately to say they are going after the people. On our side, in terms of GRAB requirements, we need to write it off, because the possibility of us recovering it, because we've done our processes, is a bit slim. So they want us to make provision for that. So and when the state attorney recovers those money, it then becomes income again. I take note about the comment of the technical bankrupt. And then I think we have dealt with that one. And I think depreciation is the last one. We budget in terms of cash. We follow a cash budgeting process. So items that are not physically paid out, we don't include in our budget. But we, in terms of accounting, we make provision for them, basically when we account for them. Otherwise, yeah, we would need huge amounts from Treasury because of those vessels. I think I've covered, and then, oh yes, the last one. On page 95, I think, of 94, they're having not included. That is, it was donations of assets. So assets we recognize on the asset side and donation as income. But there was no physical, because this I think this deal with the reconciliation between the cash flow and the actual accrual accounting that we are using. That's about it. Thank you, Chair.
That concludes the business of the day. And I think we have agreed to say, let's treat fisheries in the same way as forestry. The commitment that was made to say, you want us to understand all this so that we don't talk generally. And when we say we suspect corruption, we are saying this on behalf of our community. And when we use the term suspect, it implies there must be investigation so that you clear everybody else who, and we are able to get to those who are responsible. You see, as politicians, we talk about things. Somebody might say, you're not acting on them. But even this ability to talk about it, it might help those who are not involved in this, who do not want to be associated with it. That's the number we want to increase. We are not police. We may not arrest everybody. But, of course, that's what communities are fed up with us now. They say, we're a government that's not acting on people who are corrupt. And those who are corrupt are getting bolder every day. So let's close it at that, and let's hope the messages we are sending will, in the long term, minimize all these things and maximize the benefit of our communities in terms of the resources that we have. Thank you very much. Let's hope to meet again. We are meeting tomorrow. Sun Parks and Sunbeam. Meeting closed.